I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are author and blogger Jimmy Israel, columnist Ruben Navarrete, Republican strategist Ron Christie, and sports editor from the magazine The Nation, Dave Zirin. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas, how we doing? Welcome to the shop.
Good day, gentlemen.
Hey, man.
Michelle.
How you doing?
Yes.
Okay, well,
a little bit of everything there.
That's right.
Potpourri.
Right. Yeah. Well, Republican National Committee Chairman Michael Steele gave many in the GOP a gift they maybe didn't want. And that gift was more Michael Steele. And after staying relatively low-key since November elections on Monday, he emerged to announce he's running again for re-election, Michelle.
And it's the conversation about this has been so interesting because you would not think that after the election, the midterm election success that the party had, that there would be all this grinching. But there is, and that's something that Michael Steele talked about. He talked to Fox News, of course, on Monday about, you know, why is it, why are people on his tail so much? And here it is. Here's what he had to say.
If we had not won the seats, we won some 64 seats in the House, 21 state legislatures that flipped from Democrat to Republican. Then certainly that would rest at my doorstep because we hadn't put the appropriate mechanisms in place to win or raise the money to win. In the 2009-2010 cycle, we raised $179 million. A lot of that was small dollar donations because that's a new political playground for committee parties. We've got to be able to adapt to that. And we did.
Mike Stizzle, double dizzle.
Thanks, Michelle.
He's on the street level.
Thanks for that, Michelle.
Okay, now, but in fairness, but he does make the point that, well, the critics are making the point that if somebody else had been in the chair, they could have raised more money and won more seats. And I'm always fascinated, like how you prove a negative. I just don't get that.
If we're fifth, we'd all be drunk, right? Right. So the election's in mid-January. There isn't a whole lot of time for Steele to drum up support, which he clearly doesn't have. Is it a wise idea from the buck the party again and seek re-election? Ruben, get it.
Yo. Yeah. You know, Michael Steele tenure has taken such a weird series of twists over time. I mean, at the very beginning, in a very cynical way, as we have said many, many times on the show, it cannot be denied that one of the main reasons Republicans elected Michael Steele in the beginning was because they thought it would be cool to have a black chairman heading the RNC. Yes, when you have
That's
a black
colorblind president. Party. How can you
yes,
say that?
Yes, I know. It's a color conscious color blindness, though. And so this idea somehow that this would inoculate them from charges of racism by having a black person heading heading the RNC. But over time, something weird happened. He actually took that job seriously in terms of trying to reach out to other constituencies that make Republicans uneasy, other Latinos, African-Americans and the like. And I think Republicans began to think, well, what are we getting for our gesture here? This is not going to be just a figurehead. This is going to be somebody who actually, you know, tries to bring different people into the party.
I'm sorry. Did you say gesture
and then there
or
were all
jester?
Those... and then there were going to be all these other kind of things that happened later and lapses in judgment that Steele deserves to be faulted for. So it's been, I think, a very mixed bag for Republicans. But I just don't think that it would serve the RNC, you know, interests to replace him with somebody who is just a bland figure that doesn't take seriously the idea that the RNC and the Republican Party needs to change and greet these enormous demographic changes that are coming. So Steele may not have been the guy, but I know something else. I know that pretty much every RNC chairman before Steele has also not been the guy.
What does Ron think?
Ron?
Well, I couldn't disagree more. I think that Michael Steele started the year. We wanted a very telegenic, a very articulate, a very forceful chairman out there to counterbalance the euphoria over President Obama. And I say painful because I've been friends with Michael Steele now for, about 15 years. But I think his tenure in office has been marked by many self-inflicted wounds, from paying for some bondage club in L.A. to not raising
bad.
Money. Yeah, bondage is always bad. And I think
he needs bondizzle, y'all.
I think he needs to go. I think the discussion has been all about Michael Steele. The Republican National Committee is nearly $15 million in debt. After all of the victories that we had really accomplished in November, why are we in debt? We need a chairman who's going to stay out of the limelight and who's going to raise money and do what a party chairman should do. It's time for Michael Steele to hop along, partner, and move along and let somebody else take the reins of the party.
Ron, do you mind if I ask you, though, is it personally painful for you to say that? I mean, you seem okay, but is it personally
tortured.
Painful for you because he is a friend of yours and because he is an historic figure?
It is very... it's very painful for me because I've liked this guy. I've known him since he was running the party in Maryland and, frankly, mm-hmm. before that when he was running the party in Prince George's County in Maryland. And mm-hmm. I like the guy. But you have to judge leaders based on their competence and their ability to generate those to follow them. And I don't think he's generated much momentum behind him. And it hurts me, but he needs to go.
Look, I think you just
go ahead,
heard
Dave.
It. Yeah. I mean, Michael Steele, and I sort of parse and translate what Ron said. He's outlived his usefulness to the party. In 1984, the Republican National Convention was actually more diverse than it was in 2008, statistically. It's become more white and older between 84 and 2008. So the idea that Michael Steele was put forward as a cynical maneuver to counter the image of the Republican Party as an aging demographic dinosaur, to me, seems pretty obvious and pretty savvy. But the fact is now that the Republicans are back in power and after they've used Michael Steele as window dressing for 2 years of very racially sharp attacks on Obama's heritage, birth, and all the rest of it, now that they've done that, now that he's outlived his usefulness, hey, time to find Kate and Dawson or some other good old boy.
But the problem with that, this is Ruben again, the problem with that is it takes basically all the responsibility off of Steele's shoulders. And the main criticism I think they had about Steele is that when you're the RNC chairman, you've got to make it all about the party and not about yourself. Mm-hmm. And there have been times when Michael Steele, when he goes on tour, I mean, he's going to have a great afterlife whenever he leaves this office because he wants to go off and give speeches and write books and do everything else. He thinks he's the candidate. Michael Steele thinks he's the guy. He's forgotten about the party. It's all become about Michael Steele. That is a fair criticism.
Thing, that's true.
That's how he blew it.
It's also because, you know, he won because of Guam and the Marineris Islands. And really, if you look back at the actual election when he won, he just cleaned up in all the places that don't actually vote. So I would argue he was never actually the choice of Republican power in the country itself.
But that's the Electoral College system. I mean, by that standard, you know.
But the Marineris Islands.
Mariana Islands. Well, okay. But when you talk about cynically pushing him aside, though, I mean, why couldn't the previous chairman, Mike Duncan, make the same argument? I mean, here's a guy who was a good business person, who ran a tight ship financially and did want to run for re-election. And when the party decided that Michael Steele was a better candidate for the Times, if you could say, because there's an African-American mm-hmm. president, they said, sure. Bye-bye, Mike. So he was a nice guy, too. So what's the difference?
Let me touch on that, Michelle. It's Ron again. It's not just that Michael Steele was black. I mean, I really, really don't like folks saying, oh, the Republicans were cynical. They were going to put their black guy out. I don't think that's true. We needed, at that point, when Barack Obama was first coming into the office of the presidency, we needed somebody who could match his charisma and match his eloquence, and that was Michael Steele. The fact that he also happened to be of color, I think, is a bonus. But to suggest that Republicans have been attacking the president for his race and racially insensitive attacks, name one. There have been a couple of nut jobs out there, but I can't think of one member of the Republican leadership in the House or the Senate who has attacked this president based on his race. I can't think of one.
I'm shocked that there's gambling going on in this casino.
Well, Dave, answer the question. Is there one in the Republican? Name one.
Well, here's the thing. It's that what you've seen, first of all, is Fox News adopt a 50-state Southern strategy over the last 2 years. And the degree to which the number, first of all, of Republican Party candidates who are running in 2012 are actually employed by Fox News. I mean, it's no secret that Fox News and the Republican Party have they basically have strategy sessions together. I mean, we've seen this time and again.
I have to take issue with the amount
of people employed by Fox News who are leaders in the Republican Party and the amount that Fox News has played, and we could go chapter and verse on this, played racial politics over the last 2 years.
Well, that's an interesting question. I'm going to let Ron answer this question, then we're going to move on. But his point is that basically the race bidding has been delegated to outsourced. Answer that, Ron.
It's absurd. I mean, for Dave, for being a member of a congressional staff and for being a part of the White House for most of my professional career, I can never remember any synergy with Fox News or talking points. There's a firewall that exists there. And for one who's actually been there, I don't know how you can make the comment that, oh, that they're in collusion. And you never answered my question.
Of
Ron, course I'm not kidding. You never answered my
words,
question
Ron,
when you said
– 2 words. Tony Snow. Tony Snow.
The fact Tony
Snow. Who is Tony Rubin?
You could have somebody go from being a host on Fox News to being White House press secretary. Ron,
oh,
wake
okay.
up.
So Jay Carney leaving Time Magazine, going to be the communications director for Joe Biden.
That doesn't. No, but that doesn't disprove what I said.
Question
you made
was,
a ridiculous
question,
statement.
Okay,
my question was never answered, Dave.
Ron,
my question was never answered.
Firewall.
You said,
that
okay, you excuse me. You never answered my question.
You
I said, name
your
one
hand, Ron.
Person.
You
okay, wait a minute. Stop. This has to stop.
Excuse me. It has to stop. I said, name one person in the Republican Party who's made a racially tinged attack against President Obama, and you come out with
Fox
News.
I'd like to name one. I'd like to name one.
Go ahead, Ruben.
But first, I wanted to correct the ridiculous idea that there's a firewall between Fox News and the White House, or in the Republican apparatus. The one person I would name is that it was really irresponsible for presidential prospect Newt Gingrich to take a line from Dinesh D'Souza and suggest that President Obama had an African way of thinking.
It was a Kenyan anti-colonial worldview.
Yeah. I think that was a bad look for Newt. I think that was a bad look for Newt. I think that was not something he should have done. Newt is not on the outer fringe. He is somebody who is seriously being thought of as a perspective for 2012. And there's probably my best example of someone who dabbles in this stuff. I don't think it makes Newt a bad person, but I think that that kind of rhetoric, this Kenyan mentality rhetoric, colonial stuff, really incites the base. And I think that's what some people in the GOP
Sarah Palin talking about the difference between Americans and real Americans. Sarah Palin writing in her book about Michelle Obama has a distrust of white people after years of listening to Jeremiah Wright. Sarah Palin coming out publicly and saying she wished they'd stoke the Jeremiah Wright fires more in the 2008 campaign. I mean, so much of this is loaded
I'm going to ask Ron to give one final thought, then we're going to move on this. Not because this is not an interesting topic, but there are other things we could talk about too. Ron, final thought on that.
I think it's interesting that President Obama came to office with the media very much giving a pass on his what I would call controversial background, his drug use, his association with Jeremiah Wright. Those are facts. And the fact of the matter is now when people, after having seen him in office for 2 years, question some of his associations, somehow they're being branded as racist. I think the media, frankly, fell down on the job of truly examining who is going to be the most important person in the world. And it doesn't matter what the color of their skin is. It matters what's the content of their character and the associations that they've had over a lifetime in politics.
Jimmy, you haven't had anything to say about this, so is there something you want to add to this before we move on?
I mean, I like a contrarian. You know, I always like a guy that wants to flout convention. So I think Michael Steele, yeah, I think that's him. So yeah, come on, bro, bring it on.
I think there's more to say
more
about all of these issues. I mean, I don't remember the media making a lot of conversation about George W. Bush's multiple, and Dick Cheney's for that matter, multiple, problems with alcohol. So there is that, but that's why we have a whole group here.
Also had the Dan Rather case where they tried to frankly derail his reelection.
I don't know
if
that's the
bogus.
Media or is that Dan Rather. I mean, I don't know. Was there a committee you were going to talk about a firewall? I was never invited to that meeting. But there you go. That's why we have a group of people. If you're just joining us, we're having our weekly visit to the barbershop. It's a spicy one this week, and we're with author Jimmy Israel, Ruben Navarrete, sports editor Dave Zirin, and Republican strategist Ron Christie. Okay, back to you, Jimmy.
Thank you, Michelle. This is like a holiday dinner.
It is.
Okay. It's a warm-up, baby.
I know, right? Let's move on and talk about a little sports right now. Minnesota Viking quarterback Brett Favre is back in the news. No, it's not because of the sexting scandal, thank goodness. Not because he's waffling about retirement. On Monday night, Favre's legendary consecutive games played streak came to an end. He started 320 straight. Including the playoffs,
if you include the playoffs, so that's 297 straight regular season games. Started the streak back in September of 1992. Well, you know what? People know all that. Want to hear him talk about this for just one minute? He's talking on Monday night about the streak coming to an end. Here it is.
Drop it.
Whether it ended today, several weeks, end of last season, it's been a great run. So I'm very proud of it. It's a very difficult thing to do. I realize that more so now. Pretty amazing that God has blessed me, no doubt, with the ability to play at a high level, and I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Wow, he sounds like he's in pain. Thanks for that, Michelle.
He does sound like he's in pain. Jimmy? I don't know, Jimmy. You don't care. I'm going to ask Dave.
Of course, I care. Go ahead.
I am the Brett Favre partisan in this crew. Is this the end? The end? You think?
Yeah. I think this is the end. The end. I would be shocked to see Brett Favre come back next year in any kind of a uniform. And you know what? 297 in the NFL at the quarterback position, people should look up online. Just do a Google search of the amount of quarterbacks that the Chicago Bears alone have had since 1992. It's a remarkable feat. But I'll tell you something else. As remarkable as it is, there's a gentleman named Peyton Manning who's got a streak going on his own. I believe it's up to about 175 or so. So The idea that it could be broken is not inconceivable. When you look at baseball with Cal Ripken, I don't think that's ever being broken.
Well, before
still,
we
that's
let
a long way.
It is
it's
a long way.
Way for yeah to go from Manning to another 100 games, right? Another,
yeah, that is. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. It's a, I don't know. It's amazing.
Eight years.
For whatever else has happened in his life, that is amazing.
7 years.
You can't take that away from. Before we let everybody go, I wanted to highlight that Time Magazine announced its Person of the Year this week, and I did want to ask everybody else what their choice would be among their list of finalists. Was Julian Assange, Glenn Beck, the Chilean miners, but they ended up with Facebook co-founder and CEO Mark Zuckerberg. So I just wanted to ask you guys what you think. Dave was going like, ugh. Who's your pick?
Wow. My pick actually is Damora Smith, the head of the NFL Players Association, because first of all, the NFL is the closest thing to a national pastime we have in this country, and Damora Smith is facing a lockout at the end of this year, and he's waging a public battle to make the case that NFL football players deserve sympathy from working people, and that is a tough sell, and I think he's doing a great job of it.
Ron Christie?
I thought about this quite a bit, and I actually think the person of the year is the Tea Party voter. I think that a year ago, you never would have seen people rise up to the level that they did and over the summer and, frankly, to change the course of power in American politics. So I have to say it's the Tea Party voter.
Ruben, what about you?
Brace yourself. I'm going to agree with Ron. It's the Tea Party voter.
Oh, my God.
For the following reason.
We don't have time.
It's
okay. I'm sorry. We don't have time. I just have to hear from Jimmy.
It's
I'm sorry, guys.
Republicans. Yeah.
All right. Jimmy?
LeBron James or Antoine Dodson. Take your pick. Run and tell that homeboy.
Oh, okay.
Good choice.
Okay. Well, happy holidays, everybody. Jimmy Israel is the author of the book, The Denzel Principle. He joined us from member station WCBN in Cleveland. Ruben Navarrete is a columnist for the Washington Post Writers Group and CNN.com. He was with us from San Diego. Ron Christie is a Republican strategist and author most recently of Acting White, The Curious History of a Racial Slur. He was with us from New York. Dave Zirin is a sports editor for The Nation and is the author of Bad Sports, How Owners Are Ruining the Games We Love. He was here with me in Washington. Gentlemen, thanks so much.
Take care.
Thank you.
Happy holidays.
Yep.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and you've been listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday.